Welcome to XY Files podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotlov, MD, the founder of Vidma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. This is episode 11 of 18 in our low testosterone series. Last time we covered why your testosterone test came back normal and why that might be wrong. Today we're getting into obesity and low testosterone. What's the link? If you've listened to the earlier episodes, you already know one of the big themes of this series. Low testosterone is not just a number on a lab report. It's a syndrome. You need persistent symptoms, and you need the right biochemical evidence to match. Last episode, we talked about why a normal result can sometimes miss the real problem, especially when free testosterone is not measured properly. Today is where that becomes very practical, because men with obesity, metabolic syndrome, and type 2 diabetes are exactly the group where sloppy testing and oversimplified advice cause the most confusion. I see this all the time. A guy comes in exhausted, gaining fat mostly around the waist, sex drive is down, erections are less reliable, workouts feel flat, sleep is mediocre, motivation is off. He's often been told one of two things, either you're just getting older, or just lose weight and everything will fix itself. Sometimes he's also been told he needs testosterone immediately, based on one lab and not much else. All three of those answers can be wrong. The relationship between obesity and low testosterone is real, and it runs both ways. Obesity is probably the strongest modifiable risk factor for functional male hypogonadism. Functional means the system is suppressed, not necessarily permanently broken. That distinction matters a lot because it changes treatment. A simple way to picture it is this. Think of the hormone system like a thermostat connected to a furnace. Your brain, mainly the hypothalamus and pituitary, decides how much signal to send. The testes respond to that signal and make testosterone. In men with more visceral fat, meaning fat stored deep around the abdominal organs, there is more aromatase activity. Aromatase converts testosterone into estradiol. Men need estradiol too, just in the right range. But when that conversion goes up, the brain gets stronger, we have enough feedback, and turns down the signal. LH drops, sometimes FSH drops with it, and the testes make less testosterone. That is the first half of the loop. The second half is what men feel in real life. Lower testosterone tends to mean less lean mass, more central fat gain, worse recovery, and lower exercise capacity. The guy is not lazy. He's trying to push a car with the parking brake slightly on. He can still do it, but it takes more effort, and most people do not sustain that forever. A few weeks ago, I had a man in his early 40s tell me, "I know what to do, I just can't seem to keep doing it." That sentence comes up a lot. He was not confused about calories or steps or lifting. He was dealing with fatigue, low libido, poor sleep, and a body that had quietly shifted toward fat storage and away from muscle maintenance. In that setting, just lose weight sounds clean on paper and pretty unhelpful in practice. When I was younger in training, I used to think obesity-related low testosterone was mostly a motivation problem dressed up as an endocrine problem. I was wrong. It is often a genuine biologic loop. A 2015 review in Obesity Reviews made this point clearly. The association is not just statistical. There are mechanisms, and they matter. Now add metabolic syndrome to the picture. Metabolic syndrome is not one single disease. It is the cluster that includes central obesity, high blood sugar, insulin resistance, abnormal lipids, and high blood pressure. In clinic, I think of it as several dashboard lights coming on at the same time. You can tape over one light if you want. The engine is still not happy. Each part of metabolic syndrome pushes testosterone in the wrong direction. Central obesity increases aromatase activity. Insulin resistance and hyperglycemia seem to impair both testicular function and the signaling from the brain. Dyslipidemia and hypertension are part of the same inflammatory, vascular, metabolically stressed environment. According to the European Association of Urology guideline, low testosterone in men is closely tied to central obesity, insulin resistance, dyslipidemia, chronic inflammation, and a more prothrombotic state.
And the reverse is also true. Low testosterone can worsen fat distribution, insulin sensitivity, lipid handling, and overall metabolic function. So when a man walks in with abdominal weight gain, rising fasting glucose, higher triglycerides, lower energy, and lower libido, I do not think of that as four separate complaints. I think of it as one interconnected system showing strain from several angles. This is also why last episode matters. Total testosterone alone can be misleading in these men. That is why we prioritize direct free testosterone measurement, using equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS-MS, rather than trying to guess from formulas. At Vidma, we want the morning draw, between 7 and 11 in the morning, and we want LH and FSH with it. Without LH and FSH, you cannot classify the problem. Without classification, you cannot choose the right treatment. And the classification is not subtle. Low testosterone with high LH points to primary hypogonadism. The brain is signaling hard, the testes are not responding. Low testosterone with low or normal LH points to secondary hypogonadism. The signaling is inadequate, and the testes may still be capable of working if you restore the upstream drive. That is where enclomiphene becomes relevant, especially when LH is below 8 milli international units per milliliter. Before treatment, though, you still need the diagnosis. Symptoms plus biochemistry, not one without the other. For decision-making, the thresholds we use are total testosterone below 350 nanograms per deciliter, or free testosterone below 100 picograms per milliliter when symptoms persist. Type 2 diabetes adds another layer. Men with type 2 diabetes commonly have low testosterone, but testosterone is not diabetes treatment. That point gets lost all the time. There was an important trial called T4DM, published in 2021 in The Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology. In men at high risk for diabetes, testosterone plus a structured lifestyle program reduced progression to type 2 diabetes over 2 years. That was useful information. But the part people sometimes ignore is plus a structured lifestyle program. Testosterone was not doing all the work by itself. Then came the Traverse Diabetes substudy in 2024, published in JAMA Internal Medicine. More than 5,000 hypogonadal men with prediabetes or diabetes were followed, and testosterone alone did not significantly prevent diabetes and did not produce meaningful remission of established diabetes. That is the reality check. So if a man has prediabetes or type 2 diabetes and confirmed hypogonadism, we treat the hypogonadism because it is real and symptomatic. We do not pretend it replaces diabetes care. It does not replace nutrition work. It does not replace exercise. It does not replace medications that are actually meant to treat blood sugar, whether that is metformin, a GLP-1 medication, or something else appropriate for that patient. I had a patient recently who said, "If I fix my testosterone, do I still need to care about my A1C?" Yes, absolutely yes. Better hormone status may help body composition, energy, and adherence. It may help you feel more like yourself, but it is not a magic eraser for diabetes. That leads naturally to erectile dysfunction, because ED is often where this whole triangle becomes visible. A man may ignore the fatigue, he may ignore the belly getting bigger, he may ignore the creeping drop in performance at the gym. Trouble with erections tends to get his attention. And ED in this setting is rarely just one thing. In men with metabolic syndrome or type 2 diabetes, the prevalence can be very high, in some groups up to 70%. But not every case is hormonal. In established diabetes, ED is often heavily vascular and neuropathic. Blood vessels are affected, nerves are affected. Testosterone deficiency can contribute, and sometimes it contributes a lot, but it is not the whole story. This is one of the mistakes I see almost every week. A man assumes ED means he must have low testosterone. or he gets treated for erections alone and no one checks the metabolic picture. Both approaches miss the point. If a man presents with ED, I want to know about waist size, blood sugar, blood pressure, lipids, sleep, medications, libido, morning erections, and of course a proper hormone panel. If erection or urinary symptoms are part of the picture, and he is also an appropriate candidate for hormone support, that is one reason the enclomiphene plus tadalafil combination tablet can make sense. But the hormonal evaluation still has to be done correctly. What happens when hypogonadism is properly treated in these men? Body composition usually improves, but not overnight. Another place where people get impatient.
Across trials and reviews, treatment can reduce fat mass, lower waist circumference, and increase lean mass. The clearest changes often show up after around 12 months, not 12 days. That matters because a lot of men judge a plan too early. They want to know in 6 weeks whether their entire metabolism has been rebuilt. Biology is usually less dramatic and more stubborn than that. There is also a practical issue that almost nobody explains well. Lifestyle alone can improve obesity-associated secondary hypogonadism, and that is good news. A 2013 meta-analysis in the European Journal of Endocrinology showed that weight loss can raise testosterone in this setting. But the average increase is often modest, around 1 to 2 nanomoles per liter. Helpful, yes. Always enough, no. And long-term maintenance is hard. In many cohorts, 60 to 86% of lost weight is regained within 3 years. That is why lose weight first is an incomplete plan when symptoms are persistent and the labs support hypogonadism. It is a bit like telling a man with poor vision to squint harder before you consider glasses. Effort matters, it just is not the whole story. This is where enclomiphene fits especially well for many men with functional or secondary hypogonadism. If LH is below 8, the axis is often suppressed rather than destroyed. Enclomiphene works at the hypothalamic level, blocking estrogen feedback, which raises GnRH signaling and then increases LH and FSH. The testes are asked to do their own job again. That means endogenous testosterone production rises while spermatogenesis and fertility are preserved. That preservation matters. TRT suppresses gonadotropins. When men start testosterone replacement, LH and FSH drop, sperm production drops, and testicular size and function can decline. That is why TRT is contraindicated in men actively seeking fertility. It also means TRT is not our first move in the man whose testes are still capable of responding. If the problem is secondary or functional, enclomiphene is the better first-line option. One small technical point that turns out to be a very big clinical point. Enclomiphene is not for primary hypogonadism. If testosterone is low and LH is high, the signal is already loud. The testes are not answering. Giving more upstream encouragement in that situation does not solve the problem. That pattern usually needs testosterone replacement, educationally speaking, because the testes cannot respond adequately. Viedma does not offer TRT, and we are not a TRT clinic. We are a preventive men's health clinic focused on getting the diagnosis right and treating the men who actually fit a fertility-preserving, physiology-first approach. There is also the safety conversation, because men hear conflicting things. The large TRAVERSE trial, published in 2023, followed 5,246 men for about 33 months and found that TRT was non-inferior to placebo for major cardiovascular events. It also did not show increased prostate cancer risk. That is reassuring. It does not mean testosterone should be used as a cardiometabolic shortcut. It also does not mean there are no side effects. The most common adverse effect is elevated hematocrit, which is why monitoring matters. For the men we treat, we recheck after the first month and then every 6 months. The point is simple. Appropriate treatment can be safe, but it still needs adult supervision. One more nuance that came into focus during the COVID years. Acute illness can temporarily suppress testosterone. So if a man has labs drawn while very sick, stressed, or recently recovering, I'm cautious about overinterpreting them. That is another version of the same theme. Context matters. A lot of guys hear all this and think, okay, so if I'm overweight and my testosterone is low, I should just start something. Not so fast. The mistake I see most often is skipping the classification step. Someone orders only total testosterone, maybe in the afternoon, and then makes a big decision from one number. That is not enough. Another common misunderstanding is, if I lose weight, testosterone will definitely normalize. It might improve. Sometimes it improves quite a bit. But the average rise is often modest, and maintenance is hard. If symptoms persist and your total testosterone is under 350, or your free testosterone is under 100, you still need a real evaluation. Another one is, ED in diabetes means hormones. Sometimes, often not entirely. Vascular disease and neuropathy are major players. Hormones are part of the picture, not the whole picture.
And then there is the aging myth. Men are told low testosterone is just normal after 40. I don't love that phrase. Aging changes physiology, sure, but obesity, insulin resistance, medications, poor sleep, and metabolic disease are often doing much more of the work than the birthday itself. When those drivers suppress an otherwise intact axis, that is functional hypogonadism, it deserves a thoughtful plan, not a shrug. If you want the practical version, it is pretty straightforward. First, test correctly. Morning labs between 7 and 11. Total testosterone measured by LC-MS-MS. Direct free testosterone by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS-MS. LH and FSH always. Estradiol, CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, vitamin D, and if you are 40 or older, PSA. If body mass index is over 25, fasting insulin can also be useful. Depending on the situation, lipids, prolactin, and TSH may matter too. Second, do not diagnose from symptoms alone or from a low number alone. You need both. Third, if low testosterone is confirmed, classify it. High LH plus low testosterone means primary. Low or normal LH plus low testosterone means secondary. That one distinction tells you whether a fertility-preserving option like enclomiphene makes sense. Fourth, do not separate hormones from metabolism. If you have low testosterone plus abdominal obesity, rising glucose, or ED, treat the whole picture. Hormones, sleep, weight, insulin resistance, blood pressure, medications, training, recovery. Real life is not divided into neat folders. That is really the message of this episode. Obesity, metabolic syndrome, and type 2 diabetes form a true low testosterone triangle. Each can worsen the others. But that does not mean every man needs the same treatment. Some men have functional secondary hypogonadism and do very well with enclomiphene plus lifestyle changes. Some have primary hypogonadism and need a different conversation. The only way to know is to look carefully, not quickly. Next time, we'll get into depression, bone loss, and other conditions linked to low testosterone. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you, upload your labs to VIDMA for free, or order labs through our special offer at VIDMA.com.